Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
Cullum O'Mungain here, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApps, 51551 for your text. Jacinta, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Cullum, how are you?
Drones. Is it every day? Every day, is it?
Well, it's now where I'm living, it's not every day, but no, it was just something that when I heard you covering it yesterday, I think that there needs to be a bit of thought around drones and the drone deliveries. I'm living in Dublin 15, and it seems to be one of the up and coming areas for drones and drone deliveries. And I also live in a small terraced house, mid terrace, and I'm back onto mid terraces, so our gardens are very small. And when drones are delivering food, you apparently have to, your back garden has to be empty. So when they're delivering to my neighbour, the drone is actually over my garden, and then this a door opens at the bottom of the spaceship, and a bag comes out and is dropped down. And I just thought I'd, when you were covering it yesterday, I thought I'd send you a text just saying there's privacy issues there as well. And I know Roderick O'Gorman was raising an issue about it, but I think that they need to look at maybe doing drone deliveries in front gardens.
Right, so just the back garden has to be empty for a delivery to take place. So does that mean the drone hovers over a neighbouring garden while it waits for the other garden to get clear, is it?
Well, I assume that the garden is cleared, but it's for it to line up. And I mean, if there's a bit of a wind or whatever, they have to line up, you know, hover over a neighbour's garden. And it's like a scene out of the Minority Report. You're kind of waiting on Tom Cruise to come down on a rope and little robotic spiders come in and check, are you doing what you're supposed to be doing?
Would you mind them as much if Tom Cruise did come down the rope?
Well, at my age and at his age, maybe we could have a cup of tea.
Right. And come here to me, what things are people getting delivered on the drones? What do you see coming out? Geez. If it's not little spiders, what is coming out of these drones?
No, a brown paper bag. So it could be money. It could be anything. I don't know. It's a brown paper bag. But just, look, all I'm saying is, you know, I mean, I know that it's not a huge issue and people don't get deliveries every day, but I assume that the people that own the drone companies are going to be pushing for more business and more business. So we're all going to have drones hovering over us. And I just think maybe there should be some rules that it's in the front garden, or when it's high density, maybe they need to look at a different type of delivery.
And would you hear them? Are they loud?
Absolutely. You could be in the other part of the house and you hear this. It's dum dum dum. It's like that other film with the helicopters coming up, like this blades going over your
apocalypse
over your
now,
head.
Is it?
Apocalypse. Yes. Yeah. And I just thought, look, I mean, I know I heard that poor woman that got herself into trouble with the visitors. So it's nothing like that. But I just sent a text saying, you know, there are issues there. And I think that, you know, you could let this slide, but I think it needs to be looked at and considered.
Right. I think the line from Apocalypse Now is, I love the smell of napalm in the morning, but it's I love the smell of a fast food delivery at lunchtime. But come here to me, you wouldn't be tempted ever, if the service is available, you wouldn't be tempted, having seen it in operation and knowing that it at least works and delivers, you've never been tempted, have you?
Well, no, but now that's only because, you know, my vintage, I prefer to cook for myself or go out for something to eat. It's more sociable than having something delivered down into my back garden and me to sit there eating it. But just look, as I say, I thought I'd send a text just to say it's another aspect of, I'm not against progress. I think there's huge benefits for drones and prescription delivery and things like that. And so what if people want food delivered? But I just think they need to look at the rules around invading other people's privacy.
Right.
I mean, I'd hate to be younger if I wanted to go out and sunbathe in my back garden to do a skinny dip or a skinny sunbathe. But I'm a bit past that now. So,
well, you know,
sure
never say never.
Well, that's true. Never say never. But I'm still waiting on. I'll keep waiting on Tom Cruise to come down.
All right. I just the what you know is there a pattern? Is it more at weekends? Is it in the evenings? You know, is it kind of? Have you noticed any particular busy time?
I could, but I don't want to shock my neighbour for.
Fair enough.
I assume that they do it when there isn't other people around in the house. But no, it's look. I mean, certainly, I've been up at the Blanchardstown Centre. And in the evening time, and it's constant drones going. And the same with Junction 6 there on the Navan Road. Drones going constantly. Now, I don't know whether they're all delivering food or whether they're delivering groceries. I don't know. But right.
I've heard of somebody getting a cup of coffee delivered with one. Just,
oh,
just one cup of coffee lowered down.
Oh,
really?
Absolutely. Oh, that's absolutely a regular. I could tell you people that do that all the time.
And would it still be warm by the time it lands?
I assume it has to be. Sure, who would be looking for cold coffee? But then I suppose they can nuke it in the microwave. But no, that's a very much popular. But it's now the food deliveries is a regular. But I know somebody who got ice cream delivered because they were having a family party.
Right. I wonder how they stopped the coffee spilling.
There must be some sort of a mechanism inside. So all of that, think about it, Colm. All of that has to be dealt with when the door has opened in the drone. They have to untie or release the whatever it is, and then it is dropped down. It looks to me like the rope doesn't go back up. It must be some sort of a fine thing that can be just dropped. But it's only an accident waiting to happen if a blade comes off. Or
I wonder would they ever be tempted to tease somebody? You know the way as a kid, you know, an older brother or somebody might hold a lollipop over your head and get you to jump up and down a few times. Would the drone operator ever be tempted to drag the bag back up and lower it down again and see somebody on the camera
sure
jumping up and down in their back garden?
Yeah. Oh, and video it and put it up on Instagram or something. Absolutely. Yeah,
right.
That's another thing, you know.
They can pay you they can pay you the commission if they use that marketing idea you sent them.
Well, now you came up with it, so.
Okay, joint enterprise. We'll split it. Fair enough.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Mark, thanks very much, Jacinta.
Thank you.
Mark, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Colm. How are you doing?
Not too bad. Now, we heard from Jacinta in a built-up area. You're not in a built-up area. You're in a rural area, a farmer.
Yeah, I'm a farmer, yeah. I suppose, look, it's become, you know, more prevalent as time has gone on. You know, we see drones from time to time, not every day now, but we see them much more common, you know. And I suppose there's two real aspects here. Firstly, you know, who's behind it? Who's driving this drone? We don't know them. You know, it's totally different to, for argument's sake, if somebody comes and walks the field and I happen to bump into them, I can interview them. I can have a chat with them, see what they're... why are they there? Or,
right.
You know, individual is it?
How long is it going on?
Sure, it's only going on a few years, really. But, like, you know, we would have, you know,
how
maybe
often?
About a year ago. I'd see one every couple of months, really. But they'd be farming over, they'd be coming over my farm, you know, whether it's the farmyard or, you know, we were out fencing one day and one came to within 15 feet of us, for argument's sake. Now, what was it doing looking at us? I don't know.
Did it hover but, there examining what you were doing
hovered,
at the fence?
Yeah, hovered for a few seconds, yeah, to look at us and disappeared then. But I don't know who was driving it. This is the problem. And I don't know what their intentions were. You know, and I suppose there's two aspects here, really. Number one is, you know, it could worry livestock. If I go out in the morning and I see, you know, my cows are in the wrong field, maybe gone through a wire, that's, you know, is it possible a drone came along and frightened them overnight? I've heard of a very serious incident where a guy was in a shed during the winter time with his cattle. He was doing something like cleaning out a water trough or something. And a drone came along, hovered by the farm building and startled the cattle. And all the cattle ran towards him. Now, you know, you think of it like 500 kilos of an animal and they all coming towards him, maybe 30 or 40 of them in a pen. Like, he was lucky to escape with his life there.
And do the drones make animal nerve? I mean, have you seen it out on your own land?
No, I've never witnessed animals being startled, from a drone. But I've seen animals being startled by other things, and it is deadly dangerous. Like, you know, if a herd of animals all of a sudden decide to move in a certain direction, you know, there is no stopping them. you know? So,
I mean, you'd be used to a certain amount of surveillance as a farmer, wouldn't you? Because there is it aerial or satellite photography is used in order to assess eligibility for grants and the like, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but that's fine. But that's not an issue, to be honest about it, because like, and we know that is coming, and we know who's doing it, and we know for what purpose they're using it.
Right, and you don't think that's what's behind the drones, do you?
Oh, no, definitely not. No, definitely not. No, I'd imagine not, no. Like in fairness, like, it's satellite imaging. So that's taken from miles up. Like, this is something that is, you know, quite localized. But, like, but also, like, I would have, you know, a number of years ago, I decided, you know, I just, at the time, actually, after the drone flew within 15 feet of us, I said to myself, right, I'll complain this.
So who did you complain to? Was it the guards or the IAA?
Firstly, I went to the guards, and they said, "Well, actually, that's not a matter for us." And they reversed me on to the IAA, and went to them. And there was a bit of an email thread of over and back. But it was terribly onerous. Firstly, to complain them, and then, you know, we were still no further to finding out actually
how do you
who
mean
the actual culprit.
Yeah,
you know,
so what's the is there a complaints process? Is there a kind of a form you have to fill out? You have to provide details, time of day, height of the drone, all of that.
Yeah, it was done on email, but they couldn't really come back and tell me, you know, who was flying the drone in that area on that specific day. You know, it's kind of a murky kind of, you know, there's no real traceability, if you like.
So the drone has to fly, just the correspondence you got said, the drone actually has to fly under a certain height, is it?
I think that's now, so while since I looked at that.
I think it's 120 metres. All flights must be kept under 120 metres above ground level and well within the line of sight. So, I mean...
Well, now, one of them now during the spring I saw, it passed me, and I'd say it was higher than that, but I couldn't be sure now. But definitely, it's something that would have been out of range for a shotgun, for argument's sake.
Right.
And so it was quite high. And
do you have a shotgun? Do you?
I do. Yeah, but sure. Right. Yeah, but you know,
in assessing the range, you reckon?
Yeah, in assessing the range, it would be considerably more than that, I would imagine. So
would it be within the range of a rifle?
Well, you can't shoot a rifle into the air. Like.
That's illegal.
Oh, well, you'll kill someone.
Right.
Quite simply.
Even firing it into the air, would you? I suppose what goes up must come down.
Sure, some of those bullets could travel 3 or 4, maybe 5 or 6 miles even, you know?
Right.
You know, so that wouldn't be, I know, that would be totally irresponsible.
Right.
But as far as I could see, there would be not, you know, there's no real way of taking these down. Well, the one that was 15 feet away from us today, I should have thrown a stone at that maybe, but that's the thing.
Did you get any? I mean, I see, and you did provide us with some of the emails, the responses that you got, and the Irish Aviation Authority said there are very clear prohibitions on flying as a nuisance or in close proximity to uninvolved persons, those who are not participating in the flight operation itself. While this is often related to commercial operations, it's not exclusive to those type of flights. But the clear prohibitions on flying as a nuisance, did they give you any indication as to what your rights are if something does come within close proximity when it's over your property?
I didn't get into that level of detail, I suppose, with them. But the problem was they couldn't. I assumed that all these drones had a kind of tracker on them, and that... that if a drone did something in a specific area, that it could be traced back to the owner. But if that mechanism exists, they weren't inclined to tell me about it.
Right.
But I don't think that mechanism does exist.
I was in Rome over the weekend, and the police in the Vatican had special technology where they could interfere with the operation of a drone and get it to return. It's not so much bring it down, but to make it fly back to its base. But that would require an investment in technology on your part that I'm sure you don't want to get into.
But I suppose there's two aspects, right? The animal welfare point of view, you know, startling animals. And startling animals in a shed in a confined space with that farmer inside the pen with him. Like, that could have been, you know, that could have been a fatality. If he was a bit misfortunate, but the other aspect is, people maybe are, you know, and it's a concern that farmers have that drones are going in scoping out places. Why would you fly a drone over a farmyard, for example?
Right. Like, you think maybe people would be involved in the theft of equipment or machinery or
maybe look at the security arrangements
you have from above, what kind of gates, maybe alarms, and fly low over a building and see whether your house is alarmed or what kind of security measures you have.
Exactly, yeah. Like if I have a camera up in my property, I'm forced to put a sign up to say you are being videoed. But these individuals can come in here and video me without any real repercussions or without even being found out who they are, you know. Mm. I don't know. I'm a little bit like the lady the lady was on before me. Mm. You know, technology's gone on here. But unfortunately, we're not putting the safeguards in place in order to prevent such things from happening, you know.
Do you think that, you know, if you were filmed going about your daily business, or if the farm in and of itself was being filmed, that, you know, that footage might pop up somewhere else and be abused or misused or present your operation out of context?
Well, yeah, this is the problem. I suppose we're commercially minded farmers at the end of the day, and you know, unfortunately, you know, if something was taken out of context, it has ramifications on our living, really, our livelihoods. Right.
Like what?
Well, look, I'm not sure. But, well, I suppose one aspect, and I suppose in a previous life I was a sheep farmer, you know? And, you know, if you had a dead animal out the fields, for argument's sake, someone comes along and takes a snippet and says, such and such a guy has a dead animal on his farm, and, you know, it's just bad publicity. But where does livestock, does dead stock? And, you know, that's just part of it. But that could be taken out of context, for argument's sake.
Right. And you would prefer, anyway, some indication that the drone is recording, whether that's by means of, I don't know, a flashing light or something on the drone to show that recording is on.
But I would like to know who is actually driving that drone.
Right. You'd like the means to find out who's filming on your property as well, would you?
Yes, I would. And it's because, back to what I said a minute ago, if somebody's walking across my property, I can go up, have a chat with them, and within a few minutes, I'll find out what sort of an individual it is, and why are they there? And if it's just out for a walk, and if it's nice, and, you know, that's fine, no issues. But I don't know the motivations for these individuals to be flying a drone over my property. And the problem is, they're totally unidentifiable. Like, I've seen drones several times. I've never seen somebody with something in their hands flying one. You know, right. So, I think part of the legislation is it has to be within, you have to physically see it in order to fly it. You're not allowed to go any further than that. But yet I've seen drones go, you know, right. Beyond what I can see.
And what size of a drone, insofar as you're able to see it? Do you reckon it would come a distance? You wouldn't know. Okay.
No, actually, right. I don't know, to be honest. Yeah. I don't know. But they must be travelling a reasonable distance, to be fair. Mm. But they are quite noisy now. You know, the lady yesterday spoke about the mosquito sound, and it is quite like it. You know, but when it gets close to you, it is quite loud. Right. You know,
but would it start at the time it came up when you were doing the fencing? It didn't really.
It didn't start.
Just, you know, it annoyed you, though.
I was a bit gobsmacked. Right. I was a bit gobsmacked, and I was looking at it, and I was wondering, what's the story here? And then I kind of looked around to see if there was anyone around. You know, but I didn't see anyone, and yeah, kind of sank in me later on. Kind of, who was this? Right. You know, for argument's sake.
Kieran Meehan is calling us from Clare. Kieran, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Yeah, you've been listening to Mark there and to Jacinta beforehand. You probably heard Geraldine yesterday as well, your county compatriot. Have you concerns about drones yourself?
No, it was actually Geraldine's conversation and actually some of the conversations afterwards prompted me to send a text, because one of the other callers afterwards kind of implied that aren't we all filmed all the time? You always walk down O'Connell Street, I think was the actual phrase, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah.
And I just wanted to draw people's attention to it. Like he said, aren't you on CCTV all the time? Well, for instance, with CCTV, there's very strict rules regarding how it's used and how you film people. And more so, when you walk into our premises, there has to be a sign up to say you're on CCTV. So you're being informed you're being filmed, you know?
Mm. And you also have to comply under the data protection legislation as well.
Because
you're the controller of somebody's personal data by taking their image.
Yes, and who can view that is very, very strictly controlled, you know. And the other thought that occurred to me also was, like, and you might be able to even better point this out to me, but if you're doing outside broadcast, filming, RTE, I've seen RTE film, and they have a sign up, if you don't want to be filmed as an incidental footage, you know, you need to contact the producer. And that's quite common on film sets. So I've seen that in the Hinch, you know, sometimes with when they're filming, there will be a sign up saying, we are filming today, your image may be caught on camera and it can be used.
Well, you are allowed film in a public place. If you know if something is happening in a public place for the purposes of news, for example, you can film in a public place.
But yeah, I just know I remember going into a supermarket and they were filming today. If you don't want your image to be used, please contact management. And so I was kind of going to when I'm thinking like they one of those callers yesterday also said that under the rules on his drone course, that you can film for private use, but not for publication.
Yeah,
people need to be informed.
Well, the data protection legislation says using a drone to take pictures or a video as a recreational activity may be exempt from data protection law, but only if you do not publish the image or video to an unrestricted audience. So, you know, wider than, I don't know, for public broadcast or presumably publication on the internet.
Yeah. So, look, I just thought that Geraldine's request was reasonably justified.
Right.
And I just kind of said, and those two things came to mind and said, you know, they're kind of two precedents or, you know, about using CTV and film. You know, I thought that was a reasonable request.
Have you experienced them yourself?
Excuse me. We have sometimes where I'm living, yeah, they'd have fly, but I've never had really an issue with them flying over. But we've used them as well as part of our work in promotional activities, so
right.
they can be useful. But I suppose, and the third thing I put in my text as well, I really felt that that lady was assaulted quite seriously by being flung to the ground, and I hope she'd report to the Gardaí.
Yeah, I think it has gone that way, all right. And but obviously it's early doors in terms of an investigation there, and we won't prejudge the outcome of it anyway.
Yeah.
Marie,
yeah.
Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
You have definite concerns about drones and who's using them. More to the point,
I do indeed. I was in my garden one day and one flew past my ear. Now, I'm 5'3". This was just a few inches above my head. It was a big white drone. This looked like a football or, you know, something like that, and with a red flashing light, and it disappeared over the garden wall. Another day, there was a kid flying a drone. Now, it was only a toy drone, but it landed in my garden, so I just put it in the bin. And another day I looked out and there's a field behind me, which is a bit raised in comparison to my garden. And there was a fellow flying a drone back and forth over the back gardens and looking in the windows of the houses across the green from me.
All right, okay.
I got onto the Gardaí about it. But I mean, there's just no restrictions on these things, you know. And one day somebody's going to have an accident. Now, if one of those hovered over my my garden, I would take it down whatever way I could. And, you know, tough luck for whoever owned it.
You'd swing a stick at it, would you?
I certainly would. I'd fire stones at it because people have no business spying on you like that. And as for these drones delivering coffee, I mean, I've never heard anything so ridiculous.
And what about the one that landed in your garden by accident? Is that not kind of like a football going over the back wall? You know,
but like I'm an elderly person. I can't be going out. I've put up with kids throwing stuff, unmentionable stuff into my garden, I might add. Golf balls, pieces of furniture. They took out the dogs next door to me. It would cost the woman a fortune to get them to the vet. I've had them put excrement into my garden. I've had them hit golf balls towards the back windows of my house. I've had them jump, those stock cars over a ditch and could have landed in my kitchen. You know, we were mithered from them. Now, those kids have grown up and we've a bit of peace. But, like, I'm not a kid. I'm nearer to 80 than I am to 70, you know? And I'm not able to be going out and answering the door and going out and fetching balls and whatnot for people. I'm fed up with them.
Right.
No, people have the right to peace and quiet in their own home, and that's the bottom line.
And the one that came down and hovered beside you, and you say, as you say, you mentioned your height, about 5'3".
It didn't hover at my ear. It whizzed past my ear.
Whizzed past your ear, right.
Literally whizzed past my ear. Now, another few inches and it would have hit me on the head.
Right. And do you think it was done deliberately?
I have no idea.
Right.
But there was no business. Whoever was doing it had no business driving it, you know, putting it over my garden. None.
Five. Alan, good afternoon to you.
How are you?
Not too bad now. Drones in Clare again. What happened?
Yeah, in our at our own farmyard in the middle of the night, well, around 2 a.m. in the morning, the sensor lights went off in the yard and the dogs were barking. So I went out to see what was going on. And there was a drone overhead and flying around. And after a few minutes, it kind of went further away and then disappeared.
And it was quite loud enough. I mean, dogs have obviously sensitive hearing.
Well,
but
the dogs, either the dogs heard it or the dogs barked because the lights came on. I don't know which happened first, but it was definitely close enough in the yard by the time I went out.
And was there a light on the drone?
There was a light on the drone, yeah. I even got to record a little bit of it on the phone there.
And how low down was it? I mean, low enough for the dogs to pick it up? And did it dip into the yard?
It was lower than any of the roof levels of the sheds.
And was it being flown away as you looked out the window to see what the dogs were barking
at? No, it was still
at?
Around the yard. When I went out into the yard, it was still there around the yard. And I assume that whoever was operating it saw me or whatever and then just decided to leave.
And do you think that's what the purpose of it was?
Not sure. It's hard to see an innocent reason for it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. There is no, I didn't report it to the guards or anything because hurting my feelings or I'm not feeling comfortable is hardly a reason enough to be bothering the guards. But if somebody pulled up outside your property and they were looking in from the road with binoculars, you'd say that there was something not right about it.
Right.
But the drone gives people the same access. Or and maybe more because
how long did it stay in the yard? So the dogs woke up. They barked. That was quick enough. You were asleep
sure
at the time, were you?
Was there? Yeah, not sure how long it was there before I went out.
Well, you probably had to throw a few clothes on, did you? So that would have taken a few minutes.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure how long it was there before I went out, but it was there for a few minutes after I went out.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's the first time one was ever around, nor is anybody else, because you can't actually know when it was there or when it wasn't there or who's operating it.
Right. And did you ring the neighbours?
So, yeah, I would send it to a few neighbours and they had...
Straight away or did you wait?
No, I waited till the following day or that and just rang a few. And other lads had heard of something similar going on around their places or that. So,
and
so
anybody tell you that it happened before or has it happened since?
Yeah, no, it has happened. It's happened to a few other neighbours before, but nobody has said anything about it since.
And have there been any...
I can't...
It didn't coincide with any thefts or burglaries in the area?
No, not that we know of anyway, but...
But people would be nervous of it.
You can't see any good reason for it happening.
For sure.
If there was anybody... If they were after buying one or whatever and they wanted to practice and see could they fly one in the dark or that, I'm sure they'd have no problem asking permission, and you'd have no problem giving permission.
Right.
But it's hard to see any innocent reason for one in the nighttime or the daytime. But the daytime, it could be somebody just looking around the area or whatever, but definitely in the nighttime, there's something strange about it.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Stephen, you fly drones, do you?
Yes, I do. I have for about 10 years.
Right. You've been obviously tuned in and listening to the concerns of some people with drones overflying property, dipping into gardens. You heard from Alan there coming into the yard at night. Just in terms of the responsibilities of flying drones, what do you understand them to be?
Well, I think any technology can be used good for bad. I mean, people can use vehicles in a bad way. They can use cameras. They can use phones. I mean, there's quite strict regulations now. And I'd say the vast majority of people, I enjoy photography, which is why I got into aerial flying some years ago, is that you have to be registered. There is technology. There are free apps you can download that will track or show you if a drone is in the area. Plus, one thing to be aware of, unless it's a professional-grade camera drone, like, for example, RTE might use for production, most consumer drones do not have a zoom lens. They have whatever 4K camera. They can zoom in. So if they're flying near property, they can't really see any more than you would see with your own naked eye. I mean, a common misconception is they'll see and they'll do that. But they can't. But, I mean, like people driving around, maybe looking for someone to break in. Yeah, sure, of course drones can be used that way. But I also have friends who live in the country who are farmers, and they quite often use the RASME if they're, for example, missing an animal. I mean, they can be used for very good things as well. So the point is, anything can be used for bad or good purposes.
Right. As you say, if they don't have a zoom lens on them, flying them low into somebody's garden or yard would allow that up-close observation power, though, as some of our callers have been telling us about.
No, not really. I mean, they'd be very similar to a basic camera you have on your phone. Yes, you can zoom in, but the level of detail you have isn't good. You need to have optical zoom. And the drones that would have a good optical zoom would be €2,000-€4,000, not the one you'd pick up for €500 or €600 in any of the consumer shops.
OK, but I mean, if it drops to the head height of, you know, 5'3" in a garden, as we heard earlier, that's pretty close up, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I would regard that as being irresponsible. I mean, that would obviously frighten someone. It could also harm you as well. Even though most of the ones that don't require detailed licensing are the ones that weigh up to 250 grams, they could still hurt if they flew straight into you. I mean, that's like anyone just acting irresponsibly. The same as someone in a car going around racing on the public roads. That's also irresponsible.
Right. And overflying farmland and the like, what's the, as you understand it, what are your responsibilities as a drone operator when overflying areas?
Well, my understanding is mainly is you keep away from people or people who aren't involved. But I'm not a legal expert. My understanding is we don't own the airspace above us. And you can't have a drone going more than 120 metres or 400 feet in height. But like anything, you have to be responsible, whether it's a drone or a car. You have to be aware of people around you. And I say 99% of people are. The trouble is you always have a tiny minority who misuse it. And they annoy people. And though, and with the technology that's available now, it would be relatively easy to track them down. And I'd encourage anyone to report such activities to the IIA and let them do their job.
Right. Paul Brett, good afternoon to you.
Hello. How are we?
Go on, yeah.
It's just the previous caller there that, Stephen, is it? Yeah, I would agree with like 100% of what he was saying there about the drones. There was a caller on earlier to you there around 2 o'clock, and he was talking about the privacy of your of his farmyard and that. But as the previous caller said, the regulations are you shouldn't fly within 50 metres of buildings and private property, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, that was Mark was saying they flew over him.
Mark, yeah.
at the fencing when he was at the fence there, and Alan was saying that they came into his yard at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wouldn't agree with 2 o'clock in the morning. There's definitely something suspicious going on there.
Right. But you're a drone hobbyist anyway, are you?
I am. Now, I wouldn't be. It's not something I do every day or anything. It's something I do occasionally. I'm a member of the Waterford Aero Model Club here in County Waterford. It's a great little club with about 22 members or something.
Right. And your son, James, is it? He enjoys flying the drones, too.
Yes. Yeah, well, he does. Yeah, we have a small little drone. It's only 100 grams of the thing that I just fly around inside the house. But any flying that I would do, I would usually look for permission from a farmer, because I'm living in the countryside. And I'd normally ring the farmer if I'm flying in his field or even to get access into a field to fly a drone. And I don't agree with guys who are flying drones near people's property, especially with cameras on them.
Right.
I think they're the irresponsible few. The vast majority of drone operators don't behave in that manner at all. And previous caller said, yeah.
And rest assured, being in Waterford, you're not the drone flyer overflying Mark's farm, which was also in Waterford. You always ask for permission. All right, Paul, Stephen, Alan, thanks very much for that. Back in a minute. Cullum O'Mungine here. Tommy Fleming, good afternoon to you. Tommy, can you hear me?
I can. Hello.
How are you?
I'm good, Cullum. How are you? How's things?
Good, not too bad. How's the voice?
It's well rested at this point, I think. I'm actually in the middle of recording the new album, so I'm over and back to Scotland with that at the moment. But it's doing good.
Good stuff. Well, we gave you a bell today as one of Ireland's best known and foremost talented red-haired men. How are you? you're okay with that anyway. You don't. You're not disowning. You're not disowning your hair colour anyway.
No, it's, I wouldn't call it, I'm not really red anymore. With the age has taken over there. So this kind of, I'm more of, I don't know what you'd call it.
Right.
But it's you're a mixture of colour in there at this stage.
You're of the tribe. And the reason we called you today is because Jack Loudon, the actor who is married, who's from Scotland, where you've been back and forth to, but who's married to Saoirse Ronan, people would know, has been interviewed about his new role in the Netflix Pride and Prejudice series. I think it's the 6-parter. And here's what he said about his delight at being playing Mr. Darcy, breaking down, he said, one of the last great barriers.
I quite like the idea of being a ginger Darcy. I think that that's really breaking down barriers. One of the great last barriers to be broken down.
Agreed.
Yeah. And I quite like the idea of sort of me coming along and doing something else with it. But ginger, yeah, change it up. Mm.
And that was Martin Freeman was the other voice. People had known him from The Office and The Hobbit and many, many, many other things besides. Tommy Fleming, the issue of people who have red hair encountering prejudice there. He is joking, but he wouldn't have brought it up unless it was a thing.
I've never experienced it. I suppose I did as a kid and a teenager growing up with the slagging of being, you know, foxy, ginger, Duracell, all of those things, copper top. You know, but I mean, it's all jest. Do you know what I mean? And is there a barrier to be broken down? I never experienced that. No, I mean, I suppose, will we ever see a ginger Bond? I don't know.
Don't know. Well, I don't know. How's your stuntman technique?
Oh, God, no, that wouldn't be me, no. In fairness. Not at all. You know what? I mean, is he breaking the barrier down? Possibly.
Go on, give us a try of the Bond phrase. The name's Fleming. No. Tommy Fleming.
Oh, for God's sake, Fleming. And there's too many.
Well, the fellow who wrote it was a Fleming, so you have as much claim to it as
anyone. Yeah, it was actually Ian Fleming. And my nephew is actually called Ian Fleming. So that's, there you have it. So there's a connection. But I don't know if there's any barriers to be broken down, Colm, is there? I never experienced prejudice as a redhead, certainly not. I mean, I think it's all tongue in cheek, isn't it?
Yeah. Is it an advantage for an Irish singer who is, I suppose, you know, you go singing in the States, you go singing in continental Europe, and for whatever reason, people expect Irish people to have red hair, and here arrives a singer with lovely voice, red hair, all part of the package when they're going to get the full Irish musical experience. Does it help?
Of course, it helped for years in America in many ways. You know, I mean, it was very funny because they would ask you, you know, you would be asked strange questions, but that's for sure. Like you'd be doing a meet and greet after a show and somebody would ask you, oh my God, is your hair real? You know, so there was those kind of questions, especially in my early years when I actually grew my hair when I was about 21, 22. That's not today or yesterday.
Shoulder length?
No, it would have been kind of not shoulder length, just above it, maybe. Right. It was enough to tie it in a ponytail. I thought I was the coolest thing on earth. Looking back on it, that's not exactly what it was. But yeah, you know, so you know, having kind of ginger locks or red locks or whatever they want to call them was an advantage. The Americans loved it. You know, like another advantage would be you got a discount in Australia on sunblock because of your colour.
Really?
So, yeah, that's still there actually. So you know, things like that. You know, I mean,
I suppose yeah,
never,
but people probably have to wear it. Well, I mean, everybody in dermatologists would say should wear it all year
should
round.
Should be wearing it, yeah.
But
absolutely.
I suppose yeah, people with very pale skin.
I've never come across any. It's never been a disadvantage, let me put it that way. Right. So not that I've experienced, in fairness.
All right, well, hang on there, because Michael Fortune, who's a folklorist with folklore.ie, is on the line. Michael, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Colm.
In the modern day, Tommy has never experienced it, but it was an issue for people in days gone by. Is that fair enough to say?
Yeah, well, I suppose we're naturally superstitious in Ireland, and red hair does crop up an awful lot with superstitions around red hair. And that was a common one. But I suppose we don't, as Tommy was saying, we don't have that kind of negativity that sometimes I kind of pick up from the English media a bit about people. Even the term ginger, I never even use it myself, but red hair what people would use. So when you'd be talking to older people, they'd say to you, oh God, if you were going to the fair years ago, or if you were going to sell something and you met a red-haired woman, usually a woman, you'd turn back. And I've heard that from men and from women. They also had it with boats as well, Colm, to say that it basically, well, it was a kind of a general superstition. Again, this is pure male, from a whole male perspective as well. So you take it with a good pinch of salt. To say the women weren't let on boats, but a red-haired woman, you know, that was an absolute no-no, a red-haired woman on a boat. And you come across that, you know, and I know a woman from Tipperary, and she swears she's trying to get out to one of the islands off Ireland, and it's her second, third time now trying to get out, and she's got a lovely head of red hair, and she says that every time she goes out, there's always an excuse for her not to get on the boat, and I won't mention the county.
Right, sure.
But, she says that it's true. She sees it. But things as well, even Cullum as well, is the around New Year's. I remember years ago, I was up in Mayo and recording a woman up in Ballinrobe, and she was still sore over it. She says that there's a kind of a tradition, I'm sure your listeners here will know, that around the first footing on New Year's, usually a dark-haired man would be the person.
No, explain what a first footer is, just so people are in the picture there.
Yeah, so like on New Year's, there's a kind of tradition that the Scots and the Northern English do it, and so did the Irish do it, and mostly in the cities they would do it. So the first person that would come into your house, into the threshold, cross over the door into your house, would be a dark-haired man. And they always said that dark-haired man would carry salt, to carry bread, to carry a little bottle of whiskey. They'd always bring a gift into the house. So this particular woman says, she was up in Ballinrobe, she says she was going into a neighbour's house, it must have been 12 o'clock, and we're all wishing each other Happy New Year. And she says the owner of the house made her stand outside the door, and she says she stood outside in the cold until a dark-haired man came, and then the dark-haired man came in, the next minute she went in then afterwards. But she was still sore over it, and I suppose you can understand this.
And what age of a woman was she when you interviewed her?
Oh, God, I'd say she was in her 60s, 70s.
Right. So the hair probably wasn't even red anymore, but she
No. Yeah, absolutely. She had it. She felt it, you know. I suppose, come here, if you're on the receiving end of something and you feel it and it hurts you, you know, that's going to stick with you. But it's there. Like, I know that in the Isle of Man, they have that same folklore around the going fishing as well. A woman from County Down, actually, was only telling me there on the folklore page there on Facebook a couple of years ago. She was saying that she was up in Killybegs, and I said a fisherman came up to her, and he informed her, he says, to keep away from the boat, he says, because you'll bring tragedy. So it's still, you know, it's still there with some people now.
Although I did see a spokesman for one of the fishermen's organisations saying it had been a long time since people had believed that, when there was a folklorist had done research on it, on the level to which people still believe that today. But I think the fiction writer Eilish Dillon as well said that either a fox or a red-haired woman crossing your path on your way to the boat was bad luck, because people believed they were one and the same thing, that they could alter their shape.
Yeah, well, there's a lot. Come here,
Tommy. We might as well ask you now. You don't have the capacity to shift your shape, do you?
No, I don't think so. Not at this stage in my life, anyway. But I do remember years ago, my mum was very, God rest her, my mum was very, very superstitious. And she believed a lot of pishrogues, as she called them. And one of them was, I was never allowed to cross the threshold, definitely on New Year's Day or at 12 o'clock. My brother was always the first one to cross it because he was the darkest in the house. So that definitely I experienced.
Really, yeah.
Yeah.
And what?
I wouldn't take offence at it.
Right, but you do, you still remember it.
Yeah, absolutely. She did that even when we were teenagers, you know, so it was a bit done...
Just a tradition, was it?
Just tradition, wasn't any kind of... There was no offence meant by it, certainly not, anyway.
And do we have any idea, Michael, what the roots of this are, like where this came from?
That's a really interesting question. Like, there's experts better than me now to comment on this, but I have a feeling it's tied in with the Norse or the Vikings. I just see there's something in some of the stuff that I'm cropping up. I come across, even when going through the folklore archives, of these red-haired men and women, even apparently, again, pitch us all stuff again, call them here again, apparently the fairies had more of an interest in taking a red-haired boy than something else. Even the mermaid folklore, a lot of the mermaid folklore, which again you get along the coast of Ireland, the mermaids always had long hair, and a lot of that mermaid folklore we have, you'll find it up in Denmark, you'll find it in Norway, and you'll be surprised. I know we've got a huge higher percentage of red-haired people in Ireland and in Scotland, but if you look at the maps and you look at that northern European link over to Denmark and over to Norway, over to Sweden, even into pockets of Russia, you'll be surprised. So again, Camir, hopefully in years to come, science and expertise would be able to kind of tease that one out a little bit more. But as Camir, listen, it's a great thing to have. As Tommy said, it's done him no harm over the years of his career. Probably only helped it.
Yeah, probably worse consequences for women in the mid to late Middle Ages, when the witchcraft hysteria broke out, because I think in some cases they were targeted at that point in continental Europe as a result of having red hair for whatever reason.
Yeah, you'd even find that a little bit, even in our own folklore as well, Colin. People would, you know, it's May Eve tomorrow, and it'll be the first of May then, obviously, and the next day. And there's an awful lot of superstition around these witches coming, taking their profit. And I'd be recording people still to this day. I only recorded a man a couple of months ago who told me a story about a witch in the village where I'm living when I was up picking the children from school. So that kind of stuff is still there. You don't even have to go back as far. But it was a dark old time enough, I'd say, for a woman that might have been a bit different, or might have been had her own personality or her own character in a very male controlled world. And that's one of the things that crops up as well. I remember a man from Waterford saying to me, he said that they were always told never marry a red haired woman, and never marry a woman from Waterford. And apparently that was on the go in a part of Kilkenny.
Right.
What about
a red haired Waterford woman?
I'm telling you one thing.
She was obviously in trouble.
Don't go to Kilkenny. Tommy, I mean, when you've been out touring abroad, you know, have you ever encountered, when you've travelled further afield, any curiosity about red hair? Because anecdotally, I know people, you know, who've travelled to Japan teaching English and further afield would have said it provokes curiosity in some quarters of the world to go down the street with red hair.
I think one of the strangest situations I ever found myself in was, this is almost 30 years ago, I was doing a show in China, in Beijing. And obviously during the day, we were all heading out to do it, to have the look around. We'd never be there again, probably. So we were in Tiananmen Square. And all of a sudden, I'm being surrounded by quite a number of Chinese.
Right.
Staring me out of it and laughing. And
any cameras?
There was a lot of it, actually. At the time, it was all disposable. Remember the big thing with the disposable cameras?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of those coming out. So it was kind of, it was a bit disturbing, but it wasn't. It was kind of funny more than disturbing, if you know what I mean.
Right. And did you laugh on the spot?
Well, when I laughed, they laughed.
Right.
So it was like, I was almost like, you know what I mean? It was a very strange situation. And like, I mean, I was very tempted to go boo.
But anyway, you disproved the myth anyway that redheads have fiery tempers.
Oh, well, a few people might actually disagree with that. As I've gotten older, I think I've gotten calmer, if that makes sense.
So you've mellowed.
I've mellowed. That's the word. Yeah. I'll tell you, one of the funniest words that was used on me was in America a good few years ago, and an agent called me pugnacious, and I didn't know what the word meant at the time. I looked it up to discover that it means fiery.
Right. Well, you know, you got to be to survive in the industry you're in, I suppose.
I suppose you have to have a tough skin and a thick neck, I suppose, don't you?
You do. You do.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. When's the album coming out, Tommy?
I'm hoping for it to be out in September, mid to late September. It's kind of it's a little bit of a pet project, to be honest with you, Colm. I've kind of gone back to my roots very much so with this one, as in very folky, very trad. And basically, it's the title of it. I co-wrote the song for the title. So it's an album called Sing Me Back Home.
Right.
So it's kind of it's an apt title.
Right, so you're whittling down the song selection at the moment and trying a few things out in studio, are you?
We're actually almost finished. So I've got another trip over, and I think we'll be there, and hopefully I'll have it kind of mastered and ready by May, June, and then the release will be at the end of September.
All right, well, the best of luck with it.
Thanks a million. No, as always, thanks. And thanks for the support from RTE, as always.
No worries. Sheila, good afternoon to you.
Hello, good afternoon.
And you are a red-haired woman?
No, I am not.
Oh, you're not? Are you not?
No, I'm not.
Where are you from?
Donegal.
You're from Donegal. So what's the red-haired connection?
No, when my father he was a fisherman. And when he would be going fishing, if he met, this is when he was young, like he would be 102 now if he was still alive.
Right.
But when he was young, if they met a red-haired woman, they would turn back. They wouldn't go to fish.
Really?
because it was bad luck.
And it was just widely believed that meeting a red-haired woman on the way to the boat was bad luck.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it was. And still to this day, the not to do with a red-haired woman, but the fishermen in Killybegs, when they are going out of going away from port, they go, I think it's with the sun or whatever. They will not, don't go against. Oh, now there's a tractor after driving in.
Go on, we can't hear the tractor.
Hold on.
Not at all. We can only hear you. Oh, here it comes. Hang on a second. Oh, sure, let us hear it pass there. It's gone. It's gone. It's gone. What about the first footer tradition? Had you heard that before?
Yes. My friend and the husband arrived on New Year's Day, and he used to be black, you know, dark haired, but he's kind of gone grey now. But he had a bag of coal for me, and the wife had a beautiful black hen.
A live hen?
Oh, yes.
All right.
I have hens and ducks and stuff.
Right.
So I was so pleased with that. But there is an awful lot of superstitions. You know, you're not allowed to whistle on a boat either.
Why not?
Oh, bad luck.
Right.
Mm.
And if a fellow with red hair had have arrived on New Year's Eve with a bottle of champagne, do you think he could have bent the rules for him?
Oh, well, I'm a teetotaler, but, you know, maybe if he came with a cake or something, I might be more...
All right.
You know, could be more of a welcome for him.
Very good. Okay, red-haired men with Black Forest gattos, take note. We're going to take a break. We're back in a minute. Inez, good afternoon to you. You're ringing in about the redheads we were discussing earlier.
The red-haired superstition.
Yes.
I was brought up in Donegal, and the house next to us up the road, the people from that house used to call into our house on New Year's morning on their way to Mass, because the next house down the road had twin boys, both of whom had red hair. And apparently there was a superstition about meeting a red-haired person, the first person you met on New Year's morning. So they always called into our house where there were no redheads to make sure they met one of us before they went any further on their way to Mass, in case they met one of the twins down the road who had red hair.
And did the neighbours know this?
The red-haired people?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't have been a big secret in the country. There would have been this superstition about it. It was unlucky that the first person you met on New Year's morning was a redhead. So they used to call into our house to make sure they met somebody who didn't have red hair, and then they went on their way.
You never reversed the trick and called into them instead, did you?
No. It was just something they did, and we understood. We didn't have a superstition about red hair, but obviously they did.
Okay.
And it was just, we just knew they called in, and that was it. They went on their way then and didn't care who they met.
Siobhan Hogan, good afternoon to you.
Hello. Hi. Hi, Colm.
How are you doing? Condolences. You lost your brother there on Good Friday.
I did, yeah. And it was a very tough month. On the 2nd of April, my brother Michael was in Limerick Hospital. He was just after getting a bed on a ward, and he had a cardiac arrest. His heart stopped for 15 minutes. But because he was in hospital, they managed to keep him alive, and they rushed him down to ICU. And he was on a ventilator for 16 days. And he was only 46. Because he was young, they repeated scans, and they got specialist opinion from neurology in Dublin. But they tried everything. The ICU doctors, they were brilliant, and the nurses. But on Good Friday, his ventilator was turned off. And because of him being young, the doctors had suggested organ donation. So the family agreed, and he did donate some of his organs. But it was only on Easter Sunday I play Eilean pipes. I had the pipes with me because in my boot of my car, I stayed at home in my brother's house in Clare. I live in Galway, but I stayed in Clare. And I was going up and down to Michael every day, up to the down to Limerick Hospital and staying in Clare. And the last day that I played them was on the Wednesday. The doctors told us that Michael's ventilator was going to be turned off. We thought that was going to be happening on Holy Thursday. But then when we went in on Holy Thursday, because of Michael being young, the doctor suggested organ donation.
Right.
And so we agreed, and then it didn't happen until Good Friday. So it possibly could have happened either Holy Thursday or Good Friday. I was parked in car park 3 of the hospital, in just across from the ambulances at Limerick Hospital. I was there for about 8 hours on the Thursday, and I was there for about 10 hours on the Friday, the day Michael's ventilator was turned off. I wanted to be with him, and that was my main priority. And you'd never think anything like that would happen. But I'm just trying to say to anyone that knows anyone or whoever did take them, can they please just do the right thing and to give them back?
And Siobhan, my pipes. They were in the boot of your car, were they, in the case,
yeah,
for the Ealing pipes? And the car,
yeah,
was the car itself taken, or was it just the Ealing pipes taken
car,
out of the back?
Well, I play a lot of music, traditional music, and before I had a kind of a routine. I'd get up in the mornings, I'd ring the ICU to see how my brother was, and then I'd play a little while before I went to the hospital, because I found the music was very calm, and he had, my brother had injury to his brain, and when he was waking up, he was having little seizures. Now, they were able to give him medication, but because of the lack of oxygen to the brain for 15 minutes, it had caused injury to the part of the brain that regulates your movement and your temperature. And so I would have spent hours and hours every day down with Michael. I wanted to be with him, and I'm glad I got to do it.
Of course.
But it's just shocking that the pipes were taken.
Obviously your mind was totally concentrated on Michael, apart from that brief respite,
yeah,
to
well,
kind of calm
well,
yourself
the
in the morning. But
the last evening I played them was in my dad's house on the Wednesday. We had met two of his doctors, and they were saying they were kind of towards the end of the road, that they didn't think there'd be anything they could do. And Michael had one last MRI scan on the Wednesday, and that would have been the 16th of April. And then they had kind of said to us that they would be turning off the ventilator. But even when we went in again on the Thursday, the ICU doctors in Limerick said they would have turned off his ventilator a week before that. But because they asked for the specialist opinion, they had to wait for neurology to agree. And even on the Holy Thursday, they were going to try a fifth medication. But then I was floating around for a few hours thinking maybe the fifth medication will work. But then ICU doctors came back in the evening, and they said that the neurology looked at his MRI scan, and they were in agreement with the ICU doctors and the family as well. We didn't want Michael to be left with a brain injury, you know.
Mm.
So then it was that evening, then they had another family meeting, and because of Michael being young, they suggested organ donation, and I was saying he'd been through so much the 2 weeks, like with everything. But then I thought of my mother straight away, and when we were teenagers, she gave us all the organ donation cards, and she said, God forbid, if you ever had an accident or anything, you'd be helping other people. And she was telling us to have them signed up and have them in our bag or our purse with us, you know.
Yeah, and I know...
She had one. Yeah, it's just such a good... Maybe there's... I'm saying it's shocking about the pipes going... been stolen, but maybe there's a bigger reason, because the organ donation nurse said not enough people are donating organs. And even Fergal... Liam Glynn was at my brother's funeral, his doctor, and he said that he has long lists of people waiting for organ transplants.
And it's very early in your grief, and obviously the loss of your brother Michael is an awful blow to you, as you say, at only 46 years of age. But is it any consolation, the organ donation, that this
well,
will
I,
help?
I was actually, that really helped me, because I was saying part of Michael, it's so sad that he was only 46. He was the eldest in my family. And he was about 8 years older than me and 9 years older than Una. And our mother used to say he was a great help when we were small, as little babies, like, and kids and everything. And I remember him being a brilliant, always been very protective big brother, you know.
Mm.
But it is actually, it is a brilliant thing to think that he's helping other people, it's keeping the life going. I can see it is a brilliant thing, the organ donation, and Dr. Lynn was saying that it's such a good thing to do, and like how the organ donation nurse said not enough people are doing it.
Oh, well,
they could do it more.
He'll save the life of other people. That's effectively the difference
he's made.
Yeah, and
because he was young, the organ donation nurse rang and said that the organs that were donated were very good because of him being young. So that means it's given some other... He helped three people the night that he passed away with the organs that he donated. He helped three people. And please God, now it'll work out really, really well for them and that they'll have a good life with Michael's organs helping them.
And you're obviously calling on other people to carry an organ donation card like he did himself.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. And even I give blood, but that's another very good thing to do. And I know often when I'm in giving it every 3 months, the nurses do be saying they're low on people giving it, but just it's such a good thing. Like, your health is so priceless. You couldn't put on anything like that. It's such a good thing to do.
Mm. Now, I know that, you know, you feel it's important to make the organ donation call, and it is an important call, and similarly the blood donation, but the original reason you were calling was about the pipes, and you've rationalised to yourself maybe that it's a good thing they got stolen because it enabled you to make the organ donation call. But
I'm trying to make something positive from a really shocking thing of my instrument being taken.
But it's not any ordinary instrument for anyone who thinks you can just walk into a shop and buy another set of Illan pipes. These pipes were made by a very well-known pipe maker and pipe player, Mickey Dunn.
Yeah, Mickey Dunn made the pipes. He's a brilliant pipe player and Illan pipes maker as well. And just to say to whoever did take them that nothing will happen, just to do the right thing and to give them back. That's what I'm hoping, to give them into a music shop or maybe leave them at a church or leave them somewhere public where and maybe put a note with it or something, and just nothing will happen to them, just to get them back.
How long did you have them for?
I had them 15 years. They were 8,500, and I bought them myself. Like, I didn't get any loan or anything. So, and it's not alone the value of them money wise, but they're priceless to me. Like, when our mother passed away at the end of 2020, I played for hours every day because I just get such relief from the music, and Michael loved music as well. So I just hope that they do the right thing and give them back.
And your playing of the pipes, you've obviously spent 15 years playing these pipes. It's not as easy to just pick up and play another pair.
I was a child and I played whistle and flute. I would have learned from Gary Shannon, and then I did the music at Limerick. Micheál O'Sullivan set up the traditional music course, and I did BA for 4 years and an MA in performance. But so I do a lot of playing, and I do teach and I play. And that's my life, like.
Right. And the University of Limerick, they gave the President's Medal to Mickey Dunn.
Yeah, that's right.
Because of his open pipe playing and his preservation of the traveller music tradition through his playing and making of the Illan pipes.
Yeah, that's right. Like, because the Illan pipes were awarded by UNESCO for culture for Ireland, so they're such an Irish instrument. It's just
Can you describe the pipes in case they've been taken out of the case and, you know, they're somewhere else? Maybe you describe them and what the distinguishing marks are.
Mickey made them in a tulip shape style. The regulators are tulip shaped. They're lovely. A lot of times they'd be more kind of square shaped, but these are tulip. And there's boxwood as well. And the chanter is the black African wood. So the reason that they're so expensive is because of the best materials you can get would be used, like, and the time and the skill and the craft to make the instrument, you know.
And it's and like, it's the Illan Pipers world is it's a small world, really, isn't it? I mean, anyone trying to sell this,
it's pointless for them
to try and sell it. They may as well just return
it. It's such a small circle, and that if anyone knows anything or hears of anything as well, just to please to do the right thing. And I have reported it to the guards in Limerick. I asked for security from the hospital, but the guards have to check the CCTV. And so I was there 8 hours on the Holy Thursday and about 10 hours on Good Friday. So I was there for hours.
And when did you notice they were gone?
Easter Sunday.
Oh, Easter Sunday.
And
right.
I had played them on the Wednesday, and then I was in the hospital all day Thursday, all day Friday. I went back to Galway on Holy Saturday, and then I was also in Gort on Sunday. So I reported it to... I had the routine was I'd get up, I'd ring to see how my brother was, and then I'd head down to the... I'd play a little bit before I'd go, then I'd head down to the hospital, and I used to stop at the first petrol station as you're heading into Ennis from Corrifin side. And I used to stop there getting coffee and petrol, and then I'd head down to the hospital, and I was parking in car park 3. And then on my way home, I used to go to the Maxall station beside the hospital in Limerick.
Right.
And I might get coffee. I wasn't really sleeping either now that well, and I was kind of living off of coffee.
No, you had a lot in your mind, sure.
I definitely know that every time after playing the pipes, I was putting them into the boot, because my little nephews and niece, they were on their Easter holidays, and I don't mind when I'm there. They play the whistles and the low whistle, and I had my low whistle left in the pipes case. My little niece, Emily, she's only 6, when she heard the pipes were taken, she said, "Does that mean the low whistle is gone as well? They love playing it." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "That's terrible."
And did you play music?
She's trying to think where they could be, and she's trying to help out, like, you know.
And did you play music at Michael's funeral?
I played the whistle and flute at my brother's funeral, yeah, for Michael.
Would you have liked to have played the Illan pipes had you had them?
Because when I heard on the Wednesday that his ventilator was going to be turned off, I played in my dad's house for an hour. I played over airs and things that I was thinking I would play. You know, I wanted to do it well for Michael.
And it's an instrument that lends itself very well to the playing of laments and the like.
Yeah, I love playing airs on it as well. And they're just the sound of them. Like, I love the whistle and flute as well. Like, it, and they're lovely instruments and very traditional. But with the pipes, they're very special.
And it sounds like you find them very therapeutic, and it's a very tough time for you. So you're feeling the loss even more, given the circumstances you're in, grieving Michael.
That's right. Yeah, I'm just saying, nothing will happen. Whoever did take them, nothing will happen. But just to do the good thing, do the right thing, do the decent thing, and just to give them back. Because it would be awful to think of them just being dumped or being left there and not being played. And they were my supposed to be my instrument for my lifetime.
And is there anywhere in particular that you'd like somebody to put them if they have them? Is there a church maybe in Limerick or somewhere in between?
Yeah, maybe a music shop and put a note on them. Or something like that, a music shop. Any music shop would probably be a good thing. Or in a church, anywhere public, or a hotel, or I don't know, anywhere they can think of that they think. And just put a note on the side of the case, you know, just...
These are Siobhan Hogan's pipes. Is your name is your name anywhere on the case? Or your phone number or details? It's not.
No, but in my case I had a blue tea towel was wrapping up the top part and the lower part. There's different pieces. There's a lot of different pieces, and for protecting it, I had the two pieces wrapped up in a blue Helen Jones tea towel. And so I also had the low whistle, the Tony Dixon, a low whistle in the case as well. That's why my little niece was asking about it, because she knew I always leave the whistle, low whistle, in the pipes case.
All right. Well, Siobhan, we wish you all the best in trying to recover that. We do hope somebody gets in touch with you. But most of all, obviously, our condolences to you in your grief over
Michael.
What
happened to Michael was 100 times worse. And I know, but I still, there'd be huge sentimental value to me, and they'd be very special. And I know, I'm sure, Mam and Michael in heaven, they'd both want me to get them back.
And you've made it.
You know, they know that I need the music. Like, it's like a therapy for me.
For sure. And you've been very generous by putting the call for organ donation and blood donation to the fore in your appeal for the pipes today.
I was trying to, if I don't get them back, I was trying to get, with whatever I was saying, I was trying to just highlight something really positive from a very shocking situation, just that it is a great thing to do.
And you've done that and indeed more. Listen, mind yourself, Siobhan, and thanks for talking to us.
Okay, thanks, Colm.
All the best.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.